decisions about his case. Police declined to release a motive for the fatal stabbing of Robert Sanders, who had been living with the boy's mother. You never know what has happened in that house, what would cause this 7-year-old boy to do what he did. 7 years old, he went to the kitchen, grabbed a knife, and while Sanders was sleeping, he stabbed him to death. 7 years old. In Jacksonville, Florida, the state has suspended the licenses of two church-related daycare centers. At these centers, children, well, listen to this now. Children were assaulted, forced to eat worms, smell each other's feet during employee-led games of truth or dare. A former director, his name is Joshua Palin, is charged with molesting 10 children, some of them during what investigators say were these twisted games of truth or dare. He is the son, apparently, of the affiliated church's pastor. The World Health Organization continuing to warn that at any time, we could all be faced with a massive flu outbreak like that of 1918 or 1968 that killed tens of millions of people. They say that history has told us that no one can stop a pandemic. The question is, when is it going to happen? Deadly avian influenza, which has killed 55 people in Asia since resurfacing a couple years ago, has the potential, they say, to become a major human pandemic if the virus were to mutate and allow human-to-human transmission. Now, John Rappaport, our investigative reporter, simply says this is not true, but he does believe that if anything happens, it will be done on purpose. All kinds of stories breaking around this country. One includes rocks so hot in California that they're burning up acres and acres of forests and brush, causing incredible fires. In a moment, Linda Moulton Howe investigated this story. Later on this hour, she's also investigated another very strange story of dead cats showing up in Seattle. She's back with us in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Moulton Howe is an Emmy Award-winning writer, television producer, investigative reporter, and author. She goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges, first-hand eyewitnesses of high strangeness. She's a graduate of Stanford University with a master's degree in communication. She has devoted her documentary film, television, radio career to productions concerning science, medicine, and the environment, and mysteries. Earthfiles.com is her website. We sent her out on a couple stories, and she came back with some doozies. Linda, welcome back.
Hi, George.
How are you?
What a hot July, huh?
It is unbelievable. I'm getting calls from friends in St. Louis. Droughts there.
Yep.
Here on the West Coast, it's been unbelievably hot. Phoenix, a number of deaths there because of the heat. What's going on?
That's right. And the National Interagency Fire Center that's based in Boise, Idaho, is reporting that right now there are active large fires in 11 states and nearly 4 million acres have burned so far this year. In Arizona today, 150 homes in the Pumpkin Center northeast of Phoenix were evacuated when a 38,000-acre wildfire was raging within 2 miles of that town. And last week, brush fires in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. These fires were spread by really harsh winds, and you remember seeing the pictures of multi-million dollar homes that were threatened.
Yes.
Well, most of these July wildfires are linked to high temperatures, dry brush, and dry lightning strikes. But now, on that list of possible fire starters are hot rocks, so hot that the USDA Forest Service thinks hot rocks started one fire last year in the Los Padres National Forest, about 18 miles northeast of Santa Barbara. And that date was the August 21st, 2004 fire, which was 11 months ago. And you can see photographs of a landslide there where this fire took place and close-ups of these steaming hot rocks at my news website, earthfiles.com. at the top of the headlines page, there's a hot link to this Hot Rocks report. And that landslide probably happened in the past 5 to 10 years. No one really knew about it until this August 21st, 2004 fire. And the source of all the hot rock in that landslide is still also unknown. There was one temperature test that was made at 11.5 feet deep, and it measured 584 degrees Fahrenheit. And the logical things that come to mind, geothermal, volcanic magma, and even radioactivity, have been ruled out, which makes these hot rocks unique and really mysterious. And before this coast broadcast tonight, I checked again with USDA Forest Service geologist Alan King about everyone's question. Isn't there really some signs of radioactivity?
We took a Geiger counter out, and there were no abnormal readings anywhere on the slide. So we didn't pick up any indications that there was any radioactivity. We've also asked USGS to check the samples that are in there now being analyzed for any sign of radioactivity. So we're doing a double check on it. It's a very interesting and mysterious site that we're really hoping we get some more definitive answers on. But so far, it's been quite mysterious.
How strange.
Now, he told me that he plans to present this research that they've been doing on these hot rocks in October before the Geophysical Society of America in Salt Lake City. And the title of his paper says a lot. The Landslide That Caused a Forest Fire, The Study of an Unusual Thermal Anomaly. And he told me that so far, he and his colleagues, they've done literature searches around the world. They've talked to many scientists in both academic and government agencies. And nobody that they've talked to so far has heard of such hot rocks on the surface of a landslide. So right now, it seems to be a unique event, at least in the scientific literature. And just to get a picture of this, they... terrain is very rugged, as you can see in the photograph of the Earth Files. And where the fire was August 21st and has remained hot to this day is a three-acre hotspot, kind of right in the middle mm-hmm. of the landslide, and the landslide covers about 17 acres. And they have sent up USGS scientists, both from Menlo Park, California, and Denver, Colorado, trying to figure out what is going on. They've taken soil and water and gas samples. And this is really interesting. Some of the scientists think that the landslide did something special. And that is, this is their hypothesis, that it broke open rock, which is shale, going all the way back to the Eocene age, which is 54 to 34 million years old. And when that shale from the Eocene age was suddenly exposed to oxygen entering this rock body now opened by the landslide, that the oxygen might be reacting with minerals inside of all this rock body and giving off heat. It's called an exothermic heat reaction. And the minerals there are iron sulfide.
But they're not sure, right?
But they're not sure. And this is really interesting because right now, The amount of the, first of all, they thought this might be combined with organic material in there, but the amount of organic material is very small, and the quantities of the sulfide minerals and the organics in the rock body are also small, and here's the kicker. This is 11 months later. They just measured a couple of weeks ago, another measurement. And the only decrease in temperature has gone from 584 degrees Fahrenheit, the highest one, down to about 565 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that's not a lot of cooling over the span of half a year to nearly 11 months. And so now is the unknown, what in the world could be going on in these rocks, if it is some kind of chemical reaction, that would sustain that kind of temperature if, in fact, the quantities of the sulfide minerals and any organics are considered to be small. And as you heard in that little audio piece that is so important, because everybody has said, well, then it has to be radioactive. Well, they haven't found
that yet.
Anything. And now, if everybody, because it's so hot and everybody's worried about fire, they have, in all of this research, they've let the Los Padres rangers know that they've got this issue up there on that mountain. And so they know that some of the vegetation regrew this winter and spring, even though it's now, fortunately, much more sparse than it was in August of 2004. But they are continuing to check it out to see if they see any smoke or fire, because they don't, of course, they do not want to have a fire started, especially if it's coming from hot rock.
I hope this isn't a prelude to some disaster about to occur. I mean, have they ruled out this being an area where there could be a caldera like Yellowstone?
Right. They say that there is just no evidence. And in fact, Mr. King, he stressed something very interesting. He said when they have sampled around on those 3 acres where there was the fire, that the heat is patchy, which is also very interesting. It's a patchy heat, and they don't understand.
400 degrees in most cases.
Well, we're talking now. See, their last temperatures were up around 565.
Oh, so it's getting hotter.
No, the highest was 584 at 11.5 feet down, and they just went back there a couple of weeks ago, and that temperature was down, 565 is down about 20 degrees.
That's on the surface?
This is near no deeper on these last particular pipes. I think they've gone somewhere between 2 feet. And I think that last temperature was about 2 feet below the surface.
Linda, somebody was walking around with, like, rubber shoes. They'd melt.
Well, it's really pretty hot, that is for sure. And now they want to do something really interesting, which I hope they accomplish, and he does too, in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And if I learn something, I'll let you know at Coast. They want to do an overflight with infrared, because they would like to see exactly what this patchy heat, how it's distributed, and is it going on any further outside of these 3 acres?
We might have found the opening to hell, Linda.
Well,
I'm telling you, this is a weird story.
It is a true geological mystery, and after the break, we're going to go to another Earth mystery, which has haunted several parts of the world way beyond that mountain, for at least 2 or 3 decades, and that's what animal patrol officers and law enforcement call half-cat mutilation. So we're going to go from the rocks, the geology, and the heat to what is happening with animals that have happened over and over and over again throughout this planet.
And in between, let me ask you quickly, what's been going on with those exploding frogs in Europe that we were talking about?
I called Dr. Andrew Blaustein, the professor. He's an amphibian expert at Oregon State University, just a couple of weeks ago, and asked him, because he wanted to know. He had put feelers out to fellow zoologists, any info. And he said that to date, which is this month, there has never been an answer. There has not been any more reported exploding cane toads. And as he said, that makes it even stranger, because if it is something in the environment, why did it stop and start so suddenly in 2 countries? If it was some experimentation, why did it stop and start in those 2 countries so suddenly? And he's working on other research concerning amphibians around the world that I might update you in a future Coast. And that is, there is a huge die-off in amphibians in both hemispheres related to a fungus. And he and I are going to do a discussion about it concerning his data. But he's really alarmed by that. Now, whether or not there ever is a link between these phenomena, who knows? And this is one of the reasons he was very interested in what was happening. Why? Because he had never, in his professional career and he knows just about everything there is to know about amphibians. He had never, ever heard of cane toads exploding on such a massive scale anywhere the way they were reported. So this remains another Earth mystery that has not been solved.
Strange, strange things happening on this planet. Stay with us. Linda's website, earthfiles.com. You can get right to it. Go to coasttocoastam.com. There is a link right by her name. You can just zoom right to earthfiles.com. Now, when we come back, as she said, we're going to talk about this very bizarre story of half cats happening out there in the Seattle area. Look, this is a serious, gruesome story. And if it's going to get to you, I suggest for the next 30 minutes you kind of turn away for a little bit. But it is going on, and we want to get to the bottom of why. We'll be back. Well, next hour, Richard C. Hoagland from theenterprisemission.com joins us for an hour as we talk about some things going on in space. And then after that, a couple hours of our Friday into Saturday morning open lines with a special hotline opened up for truck drivers, policemen, firefighters, and newspaper carriers, because you folks work at night and you see all kinds of strange things. Art Bell, many years ago, conducted a series of interviews with the late Father Malachi Martin. One of them, called Perfect Possession, is available to you for free when you become a member of the After Dark Newsletter Fan Club. All you have to do is call this toll-free number, 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505. Go online, coasttocoastam.com. You subscribe to the newsletter, which you get every month, full color. You'll get the free CD, Perfect Possession. Now, as gruesome as it is, a story that has to be told about half cats happening out here on the West Coast. Linda, how did this story come to you? Because this, too, is one of those bizarre ones.
Well, you know, I have been investigating and reporting about half cats, I think, for about 20 years. And, in fact, in that Vancouver-Seattle area, there have been repeated cycles. And I specifically remember one that began in May of 1992. And it was at a time when all of these cats were cut in half, no blood, no tracks, no mess at the scene, and one half was missing, usually the back half. And in that year, I talked with Vic Warren, who was then supervisor of animal control for the Vancouver City Pound. And he had seven half-cat cases to solve, and he told me, and this was a quote, "They're clearly being butchered by someone. It's a real surgical job," unquote. And then in March of 93, a few months later, I was producing the documentary film Strange Harvest 1993 about animal mutilations, and I was working with then hematologist and pathologist Dr. John Altshuler in Denver, who had helped me so much in trying to do forensic examination of tissue and fluid on mutilated animals. And we arranged for him to receive one of the Vancouver half cats for examination. And he confirmed, after microscopic examination, that the entire excision had been cut with high heat. What the cutting instrument was, he did not know. And imagine, like the photograph at the top of the headlines page at Earth Files, I am showing as discreetly as possible in a small little picture what one of the half cats in the Seattle and Bothell area looked like recently.
And I want to warn people that if, you know, you have a queasy stomach, As judicious as Linda has been in this photograph, be very careful at what you look at.
Because in the big report about this, I do have photographs that are really quite astonishing from Bothell, Washington, the same area that we're talking about now. Just a few years ago, a veterinarian worked with me on a story and shared with me her x-rays, her photographs. And when you look at those photos, we're not talking about anything that is actually gruesome of liquid and blood. It is the astonishing precision
Yeah, you just see half the cat. What happens to the other half? Is it found or is it just gone?
No. Now, there is a possible exception to my no as we get to the current day. Because just to set the stage, these kinds of half cat mutilations have literally been reported throughout the world for decades. And we're talking, George, about London, England. A city, a big city. Toronto, that's another big city. Vancouver, Canada, Seattle, Bothell, and Bellingham. You might say they have a lot of rural areas where coyotes can come into the picture. We'll talk about that in a minute. Falls Church, Virginia, Pensacola, Florida, Lee, New York, Los Alamos, New Mexico, Tucson, Arizona, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Fort Worth, Austin, Plano, Texas, Tustin, San Jose, and San Diego, California. They've had multiple cycles of this. And Aurora, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, Utah. That's just to give you a list of what has happened with definitive law enforcement offense reports just in the last few years. And now it's happening again in Seattle. And the surrounding region, which includes Oak Harbor, that's a town of about 19,000 people, and 6,000 of them work for the Whidbey Island Naval Air Station and Alt Field that is there. This island, Whidbey Island, is the longest island in the continental United States. It's surrounded by the Puget Sound waters. It's maybe by car, maybe 1.5 hours north of Seattle, 2 hours south of Vancouver, British Columbia. But it's all in this region that has had these repeated half-cat cycles now for at least a couple of decades. And last week, I called up and talked with the Oak Harbor Animal Control Officer named Terry Sampson, and he confirmed that his office right now has been investigating 7 half-cat cases, but his investigation did not include any necropsies, no microscopic examination, because they have dismissed them all as coyote kills. He did confirm that there have been 3 more half-cat confirmed in Anacortes, which is in that area, and several more half-cat cases recently in Burlington, Mount Vernon, and in the Seattle suburbs. Now, coyotes. I talked to one of the Oak Harbor residents. She did not want to comment for the radio, but she was very articulate, and she said she found only the upper half of her cat near her house, and she totally rejected the coyote explanation. She said, "I do not think that a coyote did this to my cat." And then when she described what she found, she said that the cat was laid in the grass, and this was her term, quite tidy, and she said the cat's upper half looked to her like a child's glove puppet, meaning it resembled a child's puppet toy that's empty on the inside and fits over her hand.
Oh, God. Yeah.
She said there's no blood, nothing in it, totally just from the shoulders up, totally empty and neat.
So it's obvious it wasn't killed in that spot, or you'd have blood everywhere.
Exactly. Now, because I've been dealing with these cases for a long time, when I hear coyote, it is so contradictory to the forensic evidence that we have found, such as high heat at the excision of that cat from Vancouver. You know, a coyote did not sear the excision on that cat. But keeping my mind open and the listeners' minds open, the coyotes may be doing something with these cats in this area. I talked with Betty Gable. She drives buses in Oak Harbor. And one of these half cats recently belonged to her neighbor who was out of town. And so when it was found, Betty took the responsibility to get the cat remains gathered up. And she went over to the Oak Harbor Animal Control. And she talked with the authorities. And they told her it was coyote, that all of the half cat kills were coyote. So she went back to this field, this lot where she had found this dead half cat, and she walked all over it, and she told me, "Linda, I found a kill zone with all the fur and the stomach contents from the rest of that cat, and there was a back leg of a rabbit that had been freshly killed, too. And she said that there, within three houses of that location, there were three or four cats reported missing. And she said, maybe it's true, maybe it's all coyotes. But now I want to share a very interesting email that I received just within the last couple of days from a man who lives in Redmond, Washington, which is just east of Seattle. And the man wrote, quote, "There are plenty of coyotes in the Seattle area, and because I have three cats, I've made a point of studying coyotes and their habits. One thing is that a coyote typically kills a cat by biting and crushing the neck, which is very different from the Oak Harbor reports. And what he means is, and even Betty Gable said, the cat that she helped her neighbor with was cut rather cleanly from the breast bone, at the breastbone. Okay, so that's, and no crushing. There was no crushing of the breastbone at all. Now, the Oak Harbor Animal Control Officer told me that every one of the half cats that he had seen and had turned into his office had blood on the excision, which again, that is not typical of all these cases that I've investigated in other states and with Dr. Altshuler. So maybe the current rash of half cats in Oak Harbor and Seattle are the work of real coyotes, but George Coyotes would not explain the hundreds of bloodless half-cats found over the past decades, ranging from London, England, through Canada, throughout the United States. And in fact, it's worth going back to the New York Times, this newspaper that is considered the newspaper of record. In its August 13th, 1989 edition, I have the full article. It was big. And this was about 67 mutilated cats in Tustin, California.
67.
This is the New York Times. Quote, some of them were cut in half with what some say is almost surgical precision. Others say they are disemboweled or skinned. Janet Hampson of Tustin summed up the eeriness of it all. There is never any blood at the scene. The animals are often dismembered with surgical precision, and paws and other body parts are often left on the ground in strikingly similar arrangements. No one ever seems to hear anything, nor do dogs bark during the killing. She believes the cats are captured, taken elsewhere, their blood drained, and organs removed, and then replaced on their owners' lawns, unquote. This is New York Times, 1989.
Sounds like it could be a ritual, then, or something.
Well,
like
that. Or the other, that which is not human has been suggested several times, but I don't know. And then, out of Australia, in the last day, I have received this fascinating email. You might be interested that these sort of half-animal mutilations are happening here in Australia. I don't know if it's happening to domestic animals, but it is certainly happening to wild marsupials. I lived in the Wombat State Forest for 3 years in a self-built mud brick cabin miles and miles away from anything. I only saw people on the weekends, usually trail bike riders, but three times on my walk, I found baby wombats neatly cut in half. I only found the back half, and there was no sign of the front anywhere, but the back was cut clean. It was like looking at a cross-section picture in a book. You could see everything cut straight along the same line, and like the other reports that you have, there was no blood or spillage. It was exactly the same all three times and within a few hundred meters of each other, and all about half adult size. We have no wolves, and there are no dingoes down here. So, George, it's the same question that I've been asking as a TV producer and investigative reporter since September of 1979. Who or what is killing and mutilating large and small animals around the world, and why, if coyotes cannot be the answer to it all?
Now, is the portion that is left behind or brought back to the home, let's say, is that always the front, or does that change then sometimes? The front half.
I would say from all of the cases that I've investigated that the majority would be the front half, but not always.
All right. What about UFO sightings in the areas where this occurs?
I don't think that there is a single hard disk link at all. The link is in the forensic work that Dr. Altshuler did in Denver, in which he found that the entire excision of that cat from Vancouver had been cut with high heat, and it very much resembled the same microscopic examination that we had done, I think, on at least 50 animals, George. I had gone out in pastures and other people, and we had collected tissue as well as soils and plants, and I had looked at tissue under the microscope in Dr. Altshuler's laboratory many times, and he showed me how the blood was cooked and how the collagen was cooked. And the thing that puzzled him was, especially in the large animal mutilations, he couldn't find any carbon residue under the microscope where all the other forensic evidence indicated that the cut had been made with heat. And we're a carbon life form, cattle, cats, everything that's a carbon life form. And if you go to, say, a gynecologist who does laser surgery or a large animal veterinarian who uses lasers, and you look at those excisions under a microscope, you find carbon residue. Dr. Altshuler could not find carbon residue in most of the large animal mutilations that we investigated. So that's why he was not at all certain what the even the cutting instrument was.
All right, what about a chupacabra?
No, it's totally different. The chupacabras, I was in, spent quite a bit of time in Puerto Rico interviewing people and going to the Puerto Rico Medical Center to look at slides that they were examining professionally there, and saw a lot of videotape that people had taken of their animals, many animals still alive after a chupacabra's attack. And here is the bottom line. They were always quarter-inch wide, penetrating bloodless holes. Think of a quarter, think of a pencil, like a lead pencil.
Right.
And I actually saw, while I was in Puerto Rico at the medical center with doctors studying slides, how these quarter inch holes, sometimes one, like going right through the skull bone in the forehead, or as many as four together in an odd pattern, let's say on the back of the breastbone, penetrating everything, cartilage, muscle, and no blood, just holes. I interviewed a veterinarian. The TV station had brought to the veterinarian, it was several rabbits, four or five rabbits, and he told me that upon examination that he might have missed this because there was no blood. And right at the point of the where the jaw on the two or three of these rabbits, where the point of the jaw was, there was a hole, again, about the quarter-inch diameter. And he followed the hole in the necropsy up through the bottom of the jaw, through the tongue, up through the top of the roof, and going right up to where the brain would be, but no penetration of the brain tissue, no hemorrhage, did not understand how this straw-like hole could be done with no bleeding, outside of the fact that the veterinarian in Puerto Rico concluded that whatever was making these puncture holes, just clean puncture holes, had some way to cauterize. Else there should have been blood. And that's what the university in that medical center in Puerto Rico, that's what they were studying as well. So you have small puncture holes from the chupacabras attack,
and not in these
some
cases.
Animals alive.
Now, what about eyewitnesses? Has anybody seen anything? You know, you've got all these cats that are disappearing. They've been cut in half. They've been eaten in half. They've been lasered in half. Whatever's happening to them. Has anyone seen any other object, being, animal, take them?
No, and this reminds me of a conversation I had with the investigative officer in, now we're going to Austin, Texas. There was a whole rash of half-cat mutilations that included the cat owned by a veterinarian down there that I interviewed, and they did a necropsy. And, George, they found a hole in the bottom jaw of his cat, the vet's own cat, that extended through the bottom of the cat's jaw up to the brain case, very similar to the description of the veterinarian studying the chupacabras attacks in Puerto Rico. I'm not saying it was chupa, but there was that strange hole again. And the officer in Austin, Texas, who had so many cases, and they were coming in rashes, and he said, you know, Linda, the thing I just don't understand, we've got patrols out. We have been telling everybody to keep a lookout, keep their cats in. And he said, the thing we don't understand is we've got this down.